Hello, folks. Well, it's been quite a while since we've done Sans. It seems as though the last Sans was number 16, and this one was for the newsletter for May 20th. I completely apologize for not being able to do Sans. I had a headset issue that needed resolving, and I also have been relatively busy with another project, so I have not really been able to do Sans. My goal was to start with July 1st, but that didn't quite happen. But I did go through the newsletter, and it's better to just be as current as we can and move forward. For those of you who have the Braille copy of the notes we're going to be reading from, I'm hoping that this will be a better run of it, because now everything at the top is centered. And for my records, we're going to try a different page numbering system, although I was told that we probably shouldn't use page numbers, but I feel that if I am interrupted and I'm at a good stopping point, that I'll know exactly where I am if the display doesn't bring me back to where I need to be. I am Jared Reimer. This is part of the Jared Reimer Network suite of podcasts, and I hope that you will hear what's going on in the industry, which is what Sans covers. And where needed, I will go ahead and leave my thoughts as well. Some of what is covered may be available on the blog at jaredtech.help. That's jaredtech.help. This is Sans News Bites, annotated news update from the leader in information, security, training, certification, and research. July 11th, 2025, Volume 27, Number 50. Yes, it's been a while since we've done this. Hopefully, we'll be able to try and continue to do this. The newsletter comes out twice a week, normally Tuesdays and Fridays. If this means we need to cut back and only do one a week, then we can do that too and start publishing Sans News Bites on the blog on a weekly basis. And I should read this even if I don't end up podcasting it, because it does take a while to get the notes together. What we do is we take the general concept of what they write after each headline, and then if there's a good comment from them that I think you all should have, we'll do that. Otherwise, if I feel I want a comment, I can do that. If it's better for me to write it, then I'll write that too within the notes. Here is your table of contents for this particular newsletter. Of course, we start with top of the news, and these are items that got the most coverage from around the press these days. The first item being, four arrested in connection with UK retailer cyber attacks. M&S chairman confirms social engineering involved. Next, CISA adds 5 CVEs to known exploited vulnerabilities catalog. Citrix bleed 2 and 4 older flaws. And finally, Patch Tuesday, Microsoft and Adobe. The rest of the week's news: more patches, SAP, Ivanti, Fortinet, and Splunk. Critical vulnerability in Cisco Unified Communications Manager. Chrome and Edge extensions became Trojan horses via updates. Next, ServiceNow issues CVE for vulnerability patched in May. Next, Qantas notifies 5.7 million customers of data breach. Ingram Micro recovers from ransomware. International Criminal Court detects and contains a cyber attack. That is the end of the table of contents. There is one other section, but we don't cover that section, but we will be linking to the newsletter as we do in our show notes, which will also be posted to the blog at jaredtech.help. Let's go ahead and start with the top of the news on page 1, if you follow me on the Braille. And if you would like a Braille copy of these notes, please let me know, and I will make sure to get you a copy. I have 40 cell and 30 cell available. 4 arrested in connection with UK retailer cyber attacks. M&S chairman confirms social engineering involved. The UK's National Crime Agency, NCA, has published a press release stating that 4 people have been arrested in connection with the April 2025 cyber attacks on Marks and Spencer, M&S, Co-op, and Harrods. On July 10th, 2025, 2 males aged 19, another aged 17, and a 20-year-old female were apprehended in the West Midlands and London on suspicion of Computer Misuse Act offenses, blackmail, money laundering, and participating in the activities of an organized crime group, and their devices were seized for analysis. Archie Norman, chairman of Marks & Spencer since 2017, stated in a July 8th hearing with the UK Parliament's Business and Trade Subcommittee on Economic Security that the attack on M&S was initiated via social engineering, with an attacker impersonating an employee to request a password reset from a third-party support service. Norman also verified the presence of Dragon Force ransomware though according to Bleeping Computer, he and several media sources conflate the ransomware as a service, RAAS, with an unrelated hacktivist group of the same name based in Malaysia. Norman did not state whether M&S paid a ransom, but he did disclose an early internal decision that nobody at M&S would deal with the threat actors directly, possibly indicating the aid of a third-party negotiator. Now, here's the thing. There are several different articles, and I know I sent them to the TSB list. One of them is by Krebs on Security, who talks about the 19 and 17-year-old. And to be honest, I don't know anything about the female, even from the other article. And Sans News Bites did indicate that this particular group could be part of a bigger picture. Maybe they will open up and tell investigators what they know, because the fact that social engineering was used isn't great. And to be honest, you can't blame them, because if I'm told that my third-party supplier needs a password reset, why wouldn't I believe what they're saying? Although, to be fair, I think people in this community would probably not fall for it, because if they know the third-party vendor, as an example, they would know the voices of the people from that vendor. And yes, I know there is AI out there. I made a voice of myself, and I'm playing with it now, because this is the future. And I'm not doing everything in AI, and I am going to continue to be a human podcaster. So don't think for a minute that even if you hear intros using AI, that the whole program is going to be AI, because that's not how the podcast itself works. But I'm not about to use something like that to trick somebody into trying to gain access to something that I am not supposed to have access to. I've played around with trying to get into something, but I'm not about to lock anyone out. That's not fair to them. And if it were ever found out that I was the one that was trying to do the thing, well, there wouldn't be any more podcasts. That's for sure. Even though the justice system could, in theory, give me up to 5 years per count, it's not worth it to me. I don't know what the benefit of social engineering people is these days, and I have talked about one of our own in this very community that has done such a thing. But he was involved with a whole bunch of people, and he got quite a number of years. in one of the more recent podcasts, we talked about cyberbullying on the security box, and I still recommend that people read Teen Cyberbullying by the judge there, where your consequences end, where your rights end and consequences begin. It is a great read. I read it many years ago, and I still find that it is a great read. And even though I believe it was meant for teenagers, it was definitely an eye-opening book. And no, I'm not going to promote the book specifically by playing my review. I'm only saying that even though it may say for grades 5 to 8 and older readers, you might still get a benefit out of it. And the only reason why I'm bringing the book up was because the person involved, who I'm not going to name, although I have named him in the past, did social engineering as well as other crimes. And I was actually involved in that because he tried to get me to give him somebody else's phone number, claiming that he was from the police, but he was using a service and actually told me about what service he was using. And yes, I did take a look at the service well after he was picked up, and it's a nice service. But the only reason why I'm talking about this is to say that anybody can do this if you put your mind to it. And even though there are services out there that predate AI where you can make your voice sound different, so you can talk normal, but the caller hears it in a different way. That's why I'm mentioning this, because this type of thing with social engineering has been going on well before AI. I hope that the people will talk, and I will go ahead and blog about this topic if I haven't already, because this is something that should be blogged. There's several different articles I read on this, and it would not surprise me if I go on a tirade. As we go to our next page, let's move on to our next topic, which is CISA, as CISA adds 5 CVEs to known exploit vulnerability catalog. Citrix. What happened here? 2 and 4 older flaws. I see something that I don't know what it means here. This week, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, added 5 vulnerabilities to their known exploit vulnerabilities KEV catalog. On Thursday, July 10th, 2025, CISA added CVE 2025-5778 and out-of-bounds read vulnerability in Citrix NetScaler ADC and Gateway. The flaw, which is known widely as Citrix, and I see this same mark, so I'm not exactly sure what this is, but there's a mark, it's a, so I'm going to just call this Citrix 2. There could be a marking that I don't know what it means. And has a mitigation due date of Friday, July 11th, 2025. And by the way, as I record this, it's the 14th, so they put this out on, you know, on the 11th. So I'm recording this on the 14th, so make sure that if you do have these products that they're talking about here, that you do get updated, if possible. On Monday, July 7th, CISA added 4 older vulnerabilities to KEV. A server-side request forgery, SSRF, issue in Synecor, Zimbra, Collaboration Suite, ZCS, CVE 2019-9621, a path traversal vulnerability in Rails, Ruby on Rails, CVE 2019-5418, a command injection vulnerability in PHPM, a PHP mailer, CVE 2016-10033, and a buffer overflow vulnerability in multi-router looking glass, MRLG, CVE 2014-3931. The vulnerabilities, which all have mitigation due dates of July 28th, were added to KEV based on evidence of active exploitation. And I don't understand this. Because, well, I had a hard time reading this because I saw a marking I didn't understand in the Braille. We're talking about older CVEs, 2019s, and one 2014. That's, let's call it 6 and almost 9 plus years ago. Why did we not patch from that? Why? I understand the one from this year. Or even if it was out last year. I get it. But 6 years? 9 years? Somebody just tell me I'm crazy. I've been in this industry too long. Email iMessageTech, T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. Or leave a comment on my comment line at 888-405-7524. Am I that crazy? Patch Tuesday. Microsoft and Adobe. On Tuesday, July 8th, Microsoft and Adobe both released updates to address multiple vulnerabilities across their product lines. Microsoft released updates to address at least 130 security issues. Just one of the patched vulnerabilities, an information disclosure issue in Microsoft SQL Server, CVE 2025-49719, was previously disclosed and does not appear to have been actively exploited. However, it affects all versions of SQL Server going back to SQL Server 2016. This month's batch of Microsoft updates includes fixes for more than 50 privilege elevation vulnerabilities, more than 40 remote code execution vulnerabilities, and nearly 20 information disclosure vulnerabilities. Adobe released updates to address nearly 60 vulnerabilities, including 5 critical flaws, 3 arbitrary file system read vulnerabilities, a privilege escalation vulnerability, and a security feature bypass issue in ColdFusion, and a critical deserialization of untrusted data issue in Adobe Experience Manager forms. Tell you what, I think there's something going on in the air, because we have seen more of the types of bugs just issued and fixed these days than we've seen in the early days of 10. It's just absolutely crazy out there. The rest of the week's news. More patches. SAP, Ivanti, Fortinet, and Splunk. SAP has released 31 security notes, 27 new and 4 updated, which address vulnerabilities in supplier relationship management, SRM, NetWeaver, business objects, business warehouse, and other products. Ivanti. Oh boy, Ivanti again. If you're using them, pay attention. Ivanti has released updates to address a total of 11 vulnerabilities in Ivanti Connect, Secure, ICS, and Policy Secure, IPS, Endpoint Manager Mobile, EPM, and Endpoint Manager EPM. Oh, EPMM and Endpoint Manager EPM. So, Endpoint Management Mobile EPMM and Endpoint Management Manager EPM. So, both need to be updated there. And Fortinet. Fortinet has released advisories to address a total of 8 vulnerabilities affecting 40 analyzer. Remember, F-O-R-T-I, 40 analyzer, 40 isolator, 40 manager, 40 OS, 40 proxy, 40 sandbox, 40 SACE, S-A-S-E, 40 voice, and 40 web. Splunk has published a dozen advisories addressing vulnerabilities in third-party dependencies in Splunk SOAR, S-O-A-R, Enterprise, and DB Connect. Oh boy. All right. Get patching if you use these. They're doing everything responsibly. I can't say anything more because at least they're getting the news out. And if at all possible, patch these. They didn't say exactly what is all involved and everything, but if you use these things, check in with them. Make sure that you are as secure as possible. Seems like two of these are pretty familiar in our updates list, even though I've skipped some sands through the months. But hopefully, I will be a little more up to date because August will be a quieter month with only one meeting during that month, and I'll be able to pretty much keep as up to date as I possibly can. Speaking of vulnerabilities, I've decided not to change pages on this, but we are moving on now to our next item, and if you're on the 40 cell, you will find me on A3 with the sans heading at the top. So that way you know where we are. Critical vulnerability in Cisco Unified Communications Manager. Cisco has released updates to address a critical vulnerability in the Engineering Special ES builds of Cisco Unified Communications Manager, Unified CM, and Cisco Unified Communications Manager Session Management Edition, Unified CM SME. That could be exploited to gain root privileges on vulnerable systems. The root accounts of both products have default static credentials that cannot be changed or deleted. The vulnerability CVE 2025-20309 has a CVSS score of 10.0. And if you're following along, you will now see us change the page. And I know that they pretty much had a lot to say there. Being 10 is not good. And the fact that they have credentials that you can't change doesn't help anything. I would love to have the adage of, it's time to get a new piece of software. I believe this is software. But I'm not in that position because I don't even know what this software does and whether there are replacements. And I know this podcast reaches a community that probably doesn't use these things, but, you know, the fact that it's out there, I could be reaching people who may need to know this. If you're using these things, I would be checking in with folks because I would be asking them, why did you have something that has credentials in there that we can't fix, change, or delete? Chrome and Edge extensions. Oh boy. Chrome and Edge became Trojan horses via update. Researchers at KOI Security have discovered 18 malicious browser extensions. 10 for Chrome and 8 for Edge. That they posit are part of a campaign to add man in the middle, MITM, surveillance and attack capabilities to extensions that had previously been legitimate and safe to use for years. These extensions perform their purported functionalities, and several have held verified badges or have been featured in Google and Microsoft online marketplaces, but all received subsequent automatic version updates that introduced the same type of malware. Infected extensions capture users' browser activity and exfiltrate it to a remote command and control C2 server and may redirect the browser to a malicious URL the C2 server returns. Koi estimates the total number of users affected at 2.3 million and provides the extension IDs as indicators of compromise IOCs, urging users to remove affected extensions, clear browser data, scan for malware, monitor accounts for suspicious activity, and continue to review extensions for similar malicious behavior. The researchers highlight the exploitation of trust signals such as verification badges, install counts, featured placement, years of legitimate operation, and positive reviews, leveraging platform credibility to hide unsafe software. And I'll tell you what, I feel sorry for these folks. I actually feel sorry for them because they actually have done nothing wrong. The 2 million people or so who have been pilfered in this situation, we cannot blame. Because they're using something they're used to using. It works. I blame the operators of the stores. Not necessarily directly, but if I were running the Google Chrome store for add-ons, or the Microsoft store for add-ons, and it came to our attention that this add-on for many years has been working and is now malicious, I would be putting up a note on the user's screen that says, "We have learned that this software you've been using has been malicious." And I would give them an opportunity to revert back to the prior working version, as well as giving them an opportunity to tell them to scan their system and everything else. And I would then block that update from being re-downloaded and contacting the developer who had control of that to ask them to put out a new update. It's probably harder to ask for all of that, but at least I would do that if I were running these stores. Maybe it wouldn't be me specifically, but if I were notified of such things, that would be the action I would tell my employees to do. Put up a message on this extension. Tell them it's not safe. Tell them they must revert back to the older version, which we would take. Give them instructions on how to deal with mitigating this, and, if possible, contact the original developer to put out a new update and secure their account. ServiceNow issues CVE for vulnerability patched in May. Cloud-based service software as a service, SaaS platform ServiceNow, has issued a CVE, CVE-2025-3648, for a high-severity vulnerability affecting their Now platform 2 months after ServiceNow pushed out an update addressing the flaw, and 17 months after the Varonis Threat Labs researchers notified them about the issue. Well, first of all, why did it take 17 months to fix it? 90 days, folks. 90 days. Trend Micro doesn't play with that. Their zero-day initiative, 90 days. You don't have a patch out in 90 days, your vulnerability gets put out to force you to fix it. That's why I'm stopping and saying something now. Stop with taking your sweet time and letting them deal. And then what? 2 months after they put a patch out, they're now allowed to put out a CVE? No. In a July 2025 security bulletin, ServiceNow describes the vulnerability under certain conditional access control list, ACL, configurations. This vulnerability could enable unauthenticated and unauthenticated and unauthenticated users to use range query requests to infer instance data that is intended to be accessible to them. ServiceNow has also added access control frameworks in their Manadu and Yokohama releases. And that's great. But 17 months to get a CVE, 14 months after the fact, give me a break. Hell to the no. If you're following on the Braille, we're now on page 5, as the next item we're going to talk about is Qantas. And Qantas notifies 5.7 million customers of data breach. Australia's Qantas Airlines has gone ahead and published updates and an FAQ in the wake of a June 30th cyber attack that breached a third-party customer service platform in one of the airline's call centers. Airline operations and safety has not been impacted. Qantas is notifying customers that personal data of 5.7 million individuals were accessed in varying combinations, possibly including name, email address, and frequent flyer number with account details, in conjunction with address, date of birth, phone number, gender, and or meal preferences. No financial or passport details were stored on the affected system, and customer login credentials were not compromised. While there is no evidence that any personal data stolen from Qantas has been released, Qantas is notifying affected customers over the age of 15 via email and allowing customers with frequent flyer accounts to view potentially affected data types when logged in. The airline has set up a 24/7 support hotline providing specialist identity protection advice and resources, and is implementing additional security to restrict system access and strengthen monitoring and detection. The Australian Cyber Security Center, the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner, and the Australian Federal Police have been notified, and Qantas is working with the National Cybersecurity Coordinator. The Australian Cybersecurity Center and cybersecurity experts to investigate. While news sources initially reported a statement indicating contact with a threat actor, the updated post states Qantas has not been contacted by anyone claiming to have the data. The airline urges customers to verify the identity of callers and email senders, checking that any future Qantas emails originate from a domain ending in Qantas.com. That's Q-A-N-T-A-S. Or Qantas.com.au, and reporting any suspicious communications to the support line or to the National Anti-Scam Center's Scam Watch service. And from what I could tell on the comments, like I said, I would take the most important ones, but I didn't take any on this episode of the program. They basically stated they're telling you if you don't see email coming from these domains, then treat it as a scam. This is what happened. We haven't been contacted by anybody yet. And we're going to make sure that this doesn't happen again. So that is what I'm getting out of this. And if you don't learn from this, then I don't know what we're going to do. Mistakes happen. People get at data. what are you going to do after the fact? I think they did right. Their playbook is correct. They're working with investigators. I guess we'll see over time what happens. And until we learn more, let's keep chugging away, because I'm not going to say that they're at fault. And I don't think anybody should claim responsibility when they haven't. So if there's any updates that I spot on it, we'll post. I'm pretty confident we blogged about this next story as we move to our sixth page. Ingram Micro recovers from ransomware. Major IT distributor Ingram Micro has filed Form 8K with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, and issued ongoing updates since its discovery of ransomware on certain internal systems on or before July 5th, 2025. And this is probably an update of that story that we posted. So this is probably a good thing. Upon identifying the ransomware, Ingram Micro proactively took certain systems offline and implemented mitigation measures, notified law enforcement, and began investigating alongside third-party cybersecurity experts. And mind you, this is the 14th, so for them to be down, let's call it several days, and coming back up is a good thing. And they're trying to figure out what happened, and I'm sure that, like with everything else, we'll figure out what happened in the long run. On July 7th, subscription order service was restored globally, and phone and email order service were restored in Western Europe, Brazil, India, and China. By July 8th, phone and email ordering was restored in Austria, Canada, Singapore, the Nordics, and the U.S. And I have not done a good job in making sure that we make it say U.S. instead of us in my Braille copy. Sorry, Braille readers. The unauthorized access was also deemed fully contained and the affected systems remediated. July 9th updates confirm full restoration of operations across all countries and regions. Palo Alto Networks, PAN, has confirmed that neither the Global Protect VPN platform nor any PAN products were the attacker's access route. The register reports complaints from customers that Ingram Micro did not communicate directly about the incident and recovery, and that customer support phone lines and emails were unresponsive. Well, they could not give you anything during, and if their email was down, what do you expect? I wish they would have done better, but it sounds like they're back up now. So, let's see if something happens to them next time, and whether they do better in communication with you guys. I'll say sorry for them because I think they were trying to figure out the problem. You should be in direct communication with your customers. But, you know, I don't know the whole story. I know I read one article and this seems to be an update. So, that's all I can give you. Alright, folks, we're going to move now on to page 7. And the next item, International Criminal Court detects and contains cyber attack. The International Criminal Court, ICC, experienced a sophisticated and targeted cyber attack in late June 2025. The ICC has not provided details beyond acknowledging that the incident was swiftly discovered, confirmed, and contained through the court's alert and response mechanisms. This is the second cyber attack the ICC has reported since 2023, when the organization's systems were targeted by a cyber espionage group. The ICC is based in The Hague, Netherlands. And that is unfortunate, but at least they are trying their best to make sure that they're not a continual target. The fact that this is the second in 2 years is a good sign, I think. I think T-Mobile should take a page out of their book. I don't expect perfection. And different things are going to happen at different times. But boy, as many breaches as T-Mobile has in the last, call it 6 years, since I moved from one location to another, I would be happier to be this company than T-Mobile at this point. And I think T-Mobile's had the most coverage of breaches in the last several years. Although this latest one I heard about, I never found an article on. So even if it's 8 breaches or 10 breaches in 8 years instead of the 11, I mean, we're talking a lot of problems at T-Mobile. The editorial board of Sans News Bites, Brian Honan, Kurt Dukes, Chris Alge, David Holzer, Ed Scoutis, Gal Spitzner, Jake Williams, Dr. Johannes Ulrich, John Pescator, Josh Wright, Kathy Bradford, Lance Spitzner, Lee Neely, Mark Weatherford, Moses Frost, Suzanne Vitronaut, William Hugh Murray. Sands Institute is located at 11,200 Rockview Pike, Suite 200, North Bethesda, Maryland, 20852. I'm Jared Reimer, and this has been coverage of the Sands News for July 11th. And you can contact me by email or iMessage at tech, that's TECH, at MENVI www.ncbc.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. I try to keep this podcast as clean as possible so that everybody, no matter what their age is, can enjoy it. And I know that on the security box we can get a little rowdy, but hey, this podcast is my own, and I'm going to do my best to make sure that we get sans out on a regular basis, whether we put the thing on the blog or we podcast it so that people are up to date. I hope that everyone has enjoyed this newsletter. Again, the newsletter will be linked, and I did take the stories directly from them. If needed, we would give commentary if commentary spoke exactly what I was thinking. But I didn't do it this time. I have done it in the past. Make sure you check out the Sans Ouch podcasts as well. Search Sans, S-A-N-S, in your podcatcher, and you will find a bunch of different things that might be of interest to you. Until next time, everybody, I'm Jared Reimer saying thanks so much for listening, and make it a great day.